Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
In a world full of straight people,
aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race?
RuPaul's Drag Race, may the best drag queen win. Drag queen win.
And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
I'm Matt McConkie. I'm a writer, performer, and host of this podcast about And Just Like That. But now that we've recapped both seasons of the show, I couldn't help but wonder, should I go back and cover the original Sex and the City? The answer, of course, is no, but I can't be stopped, so every week I'll be joined by my very own Mirandas and Charlottes to unpack an episode or movie of their choosing. We're doing Sex and the City Roulette with extra Samantha and none of the Che. And just like Matt, welcome to the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. It is a big one. Not going to lie, these are two people that I have been so excited to talk to separately, and now I've brought them together somehow. It's going to be an explosive episode. We'll get right into it. We're talking about I Heart NY. This is the season 4 finale, episode 18, where, of course, Big's moving to Napa, and Samantha thinks Richard might be cheating, and Miranda's just about to give birth to Brady. And that's I Heart NY. And I heart both of these guests, and I know you're going to as well. The two people I managed to wrangle here. First up is the guy that you know as a social media drag star, Carrie Dragshaw. He's also the author of the novel Being a Queen. Dan Clay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
What a delight. What a dream. We are also joined by TV writer and producer, whose credits, to quote Drew Drogi, if you want the whole resume, go to IMDb and pack a lunch because it is long, but it includes Dexter and Once Upon a Time and Good Sam, and she created the show Insatiable for Netflix. Lauren Gussis, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Okay, let's just start with Carrie Dragshaw, Dan, because you've been in demand from the listeners to come on this show, so I know everyone's already... I know everyone is already familiar, but for the two people who aren't, Carrie Dragshaw is, you know, social media character you have created. You recreate so many of Carrie's iconic looks, and it's really taken on a life of its own. And you've gotten love from SJP on Watch What Happens Live. How did this all come to be?
Yes, it's been just the most delightful life diversion one could ever imagine. So it started as just a Halloween costume. I dressed up like Carrie Bradshaw for Halloween, as one does, with precisely zero aspirations for internet acclaim. And I posted a picture online, and, you know, an internet fairy tale happened somehow. Some algorithm picked it up and carried it to a lot of different people. And it was in 2000, it was right during the presidential election when Trump was elected. And so when that happened, I was like, okay, maybe I can keep this tutu on and live in this alternate reality for a few more years and spread a little joy. And so I decided to keep doing it. And it's been, I mean, just beyond any, I didn't really have any dreams for it. So it's gone beyond my most humble aspirations. And as you said, I've gotten the surreal opportunity to meet a bunch of the cast members. I've gotten to dress up in a lot of my favorite outfits, but this episode was a really good one to watch because I'm obsessed with the outfit that she wears at the end that gets, the shoes get ruined by Miranda's water breaking. And I haven't yet had the courage to figure out how to DIY that kind of glittery coat. So this will be
That's a good one. And you'll have to do,
I know,
like an interactive version of it so that someone can have their water break on the shoes. Yes. That's such an important part of it.
I know.
Where she says, you look pretty. You have to do that too.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
100%. And the amazing line where she says something like, you do anything to stop me from sleeping with Big. So, yes, there's a lot. Maybe it'll be my first lip sync.
Oh God, so much to look forward to.
Yeah.
Oh, and Lauren, you famously have a drag character of Samantha Jones called Samantha Bones. I don't know.
Everyone, Bones, everyone. I wish that were true.
Too late to pursue your drag dream.
That's right.
We may have just originated Samantha Bones.
Thank you for that. That's inspiring for me today.
But what is your relationship to the show in terms of fandom level, obsession level, Lauren? Have you seen all the episodes? Or
I believe I have seen them all. I believe, but I can't 100% promise you that I've seen them all.
Okay.
But I did. I love it. But I don't obsessively love it. Like, I'm not someone that rewatches things over and over again. So, but I will tell you that, you know, I watched this episode, obviously, because I'm a prepared person. But then I was like, I forgot how much I love Big. So then I started jumping around watching all the episodes. Like, I just, it took me down a whole road last night. So thank you for that.
Interesting. But the other Big lady.
Oh, yeah. But I have thoughts, though, rewatching it that are, you know, the parts that I identify with are not flattering, but also totally, but also, you know, because of my most recent project, like I had the pleasure of getting to meet Darren Star, and I know that moving forward, he was not as involved with this project, but like, that was a very cool kind of convergence for me, you know?
Yeah. So
my level of attachment to the show is, you know, I love it. And I'm not a super fan really of anything. Like, I just take it all, like the things that have influenced me deeply. And then I move through. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. This is like a healthy level of detachment.
I would say it's a healthy level of attachment. It's a healthy level of attachment. Yes. Like once I've experienced it, it's kind of like in me forever, which sounds dirtier than I mean it, but it does feel that way to me. Do you know?
It's a great quip for Samantha Bones.
Totally. Right. Once you get in there, you're never leaving. Totally.
Yeah, we have to tell people. I mean, we're recording this on April 11th, and I just saw the news this morning and almost had a heart, even though I actually knew about this. But I just to see it in print, see it out there in the trades, Lauren is currently developing the reboot of Melrose Place.
With the original cast.
With the original cast. Yes, thank you. That's important because there was, I guess, a reboot like a long time ago.
Like a decade ago, although somebody tweeted yesterday, it made me laugh. Like, I love that I love that Melrose Place is getting the Halloween treatment where we are responding only to the original and not the sequel, which I was like, well, yes, that's actually what's happening. So,
that's exactly how it should be treated. I'm so excited for it. I mean, I know that it's like so early and that you're just pitching it right now. Is there anything else you can say?
Well, just that it's a more of like a reunion style reboot. Like it's picking up the characters 30 years later, you know, this idea of like, given everything that happened in 7 seasons and 226 episodes that I watched with my eyes open like Clockwork Orange, what would these people actually be like 30 years later if something like that actually happened to them?
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, oh yes, we service plot, but then what if we look at that in a grounded way? You know, what if you really did help your sister bury her rapist alive? Like, what if you actually had your friend be like, we should lobotomize them? Like, how much... Wow,
I forgot these are things that happened.
Right. So like, how much therapy and work would be required for people to be even baseline functional given those circumstances? And what could possibly suck them back into the vortex of that? Those circumstances, and obviously all of those patterns would resurface and they'd have to confront their past. And have they moved on? Like, do people really change? Are they arrested development? Like, what happens? So.
Wow. Well, it's in a way you are giving the And Just Like That treatment to the show because you're extending their stories, you know?
We are. And what's different, I would say, is that the tone is slightly different. Like the tone is irreverent, like the original, in a way that it's a little bit more tongue in cheek. Like it has a meta quality of the younger characters that kind of are like, really, that happened to you? And like, that was what you did? Like, you thought that was like the moral thing that you were supposed to do in that moment? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or like,
yeah,
wait, this happened to you and you've never processed it? Like, what do you mean? X, Y, you know? And so I think, and just like that stays in its bubble a little bit. And
yeah,
this reboot recaptures the essence of the original with like the wild ride and the joy and like all of the nostalgia, but it looks at what happened and where they are now through a necessarily more modern perspective, which makes it slightly different, but without vilifying anything that happened. Do you know?
That's perfect. I mean, I'm so excited. I promise we'll move off this. This has become just a Melrose Place and just like Melrose, but I am curious. I mean, I know that the one 10 years ago, we're doing the Halloween treatment. That does not exist, which I think we're going to be grateful for. But does Models, Inc. exist? Is that canon in this universe?
You're going to have to remind me. Like, I watched them all. Is that from...
Okay, Models, Inc. was the Melrose Place spinoff. So Amanda's mom was played by Linda Gray.
Yeah.
And she owned a modeling agency and they did the, what was it called when you sort of like planted the seeds in Melrose Place in one episode, sure. Similar to what they had done with 90210
it's the most inappropriate way of doing it ever, where 20 something Jake is dating a teenager. Do you mean that?
Yes. That's how they, that's right.
Kelly Taylor, Jake worked on Kelly Taylor's house.
Yeah.
And she was desperately in love with him. And like, nothing ever happened physically. They kissed a couple of times, but like it didn't go all the way there.
Right.
But it was a little bit like, oh, wow. Like when you rewatch it, it was like, ooh.
Wow.
He's like 24 and she's maybe 17. And like, it gets all of my inner like teenage girl daddy issue fantasy going about like, oh my God, I was, you know, like, when I was 14, my first kiss was an 18-year-old boy. Like, I've always had the thing, the older guy thing, which explains my thing for big.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Like, but I really, when you watch that pilot, the way that her friends are like, we're going to go to a club and like, maybe we're co-signing this, but maybe we're not, about you and Jake Hansen, you know?
Yeah. Now it's all flooding back to me. He comes to the peach pit and it's like all the gang and then like a man is sitting there.
Right. It's like, weird. Yeah. I'm uncomfortable, but also it's sort of hot. You know, and then
yeah,
he said no. He did the right thing, to be honest. Like it's okay.
Okay,
it all is that's sort good. Of okay, but you couldn't even do that storyline now.
Yeah, we don't have to cancel Jake.
Right, but it was very entertaining to watch. And like, I'm just saying, if I'm Kelly Taylor, like I'm all the way in on Jake. You know,
same,
if I'm
Jake,
I'm scared. I'm scared for my future.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah. So, but
oh
yes.
God.
The origins are a little bit of an older guy thing. So I think this episode for me with Big, it like pushed all those buttons for me. And she like totally leans in to that. She's like with the record and him talking about his parents and all that stuff. I was like,
mm-hmm.
Oh my, and she, I don't know if you all noticed this, but like she went into, and I don't know if this was a direction or a choice or both, but SJP plays like real into the little girl thing.
Oh, totally.
In a way that like, she is an empowered woman. And in that part where he's telling her he's moving, she goes full little girl. Like her voice register changes. And so I was like very interested in that.
Yeah.
That between the two of them, you know?
Yeah, same. It's interesting. I mean, I am not a big, I mean, I've
really?
On this podcast many times that I was, you know, happy to see him leave this earth and just like that. Spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen that. But where do your alliances lie, Dan, in the Big versus Aiden versus any, you know, Petrovsky Burger?
Right. I'm team Burger.
I love that.
I think he's misunderstood, you know. I think the post-it was the best he could do. No. I mean, I think that in different seasons, different men bring their best selves. I think this episode for me captured all of the things I dislike about Big. And I think there's no way, I think the brilliance of Sex and the City is that you instantly personalize the plot lines. And from the beginning of the episode, she asks, like, can I come over? I'm lonely. And he goes, sure. I'm like, oh my God, if anybody said sure after I asked if I could come over to their house, I would just throw myself in the Hudson River.
Oh, yeah.
I need more enthusiasm from the person that I'm going over to bring pizza to and dance to.
Yeah, good point.
No, it's so creepy. It's so creepy.
I know. And they like, she becomes so desperate. And, you know, I have a special heart for early season Carrie, where she's kind of a little bit more of that independent New York it girl. I don't need it. Some women aren't meant to be tamed. That Carrie is I heart that Carrie. And in this episode, she's a little bit, I mean, I get it. This icon of your life and of New York City is leaving. So it would be, I don't know, it would bring up a lot of things, but I don't love Big or my girl too much in this episode, but I love the friendship dynamics of this episode. That's where it gets my
exactly
heart.
Same. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, she's at her best after Big has hurt her or left her in some way, usually. Like sometimes her with him is tough. And, but I do love that we have opposing viewpoints brought together here, like a great cable news talk show or something.
Totally. This is the new crossfire.
It's alchemy. Like they transform each other. What you just said, Matt, is true. That even though he, in a lot of ways, is oppositional and doesn't give her what she needs, that's the thing she needs to grow.
Yeah.
Like they're twin flames in that way, right? Mm. That like time and space and availability puts them at odds in a way that they can't be together until they're together. But in the spiritual sense, they both are forcing each other to change in a way that no other partner that she has forces her into discomfort and into change.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's part of the reason why
I love that.
And all of the things
I love that
says to her that are so like, I mean, this is what I'm saying, like the unflattering, like I am the chaser of the unavailable, like, sure. Or like, you know, when she's like, were you just not going to tell me? And he sort of shrugs. Do you know? And like, it's the yearning because he is not entirely available, which is heartbreaking and gross to identify with that. But also what you said is true, that he changes her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he tells her in his own way, like he gives her the plane ticket. And, but this idea of the fate, right? In this episode that is so like pulling on my heart, is like, they are fated. They're fated. And like, for now, they're this. And we all know where it's going. We have the benefit of knowing where it's going. And so to watch this over the course of the series and feel the heartbreak, but know that like, oh, you can't miss what's for you. Because even if he leaves and even if she's with all these other people at the end of the day, we know where it goes. There's something so like, oh, it makes me cry. And
in that
moment, they weren't supposed to be together because fate intervened. Like, she can't miss something that's for her, because what was supposed to happen is that in that moment, she was supposed to have a kiss goodbye, not a fuck goodbye. And so Miranda goes into labor. And like, that's the fated moment, right? And like, that's the truest love in that series, is the friendship love. So it says it.
Yeah.
It's like, the truest love is like, that is the only thing that could have pulled Carrie away from Big. And you see it in the moment where like Miranda's pushing out. I mean, I'm assuming that I'm the only person between the three of us that's pushed out a baby. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but I think I am.
I think and, that's like, fair to say.
That handhold that like carries her great love that she's looking at when she pushes out baby.
Yeah.
Like that's, to me, the most profound statement about the different kinds. And also then the baby, like she's like, oh my God, it's basically Miranda's way of saying, I never thought I could love this tiny creature, but and suddenly I'm in love with it.
Yeah.
It just sort of shows you that love, the only thing that's real is love. And it doesn't need to be the one kind.
So true. That the handhold moment is Sex and the City at its finest. Like the true love, anytime it comes back to the love story between Carrie and Miranda, that's why we're here, you know?
Yes.
But I gotta say, to just go back to the beginning briefly, that moment you're talking about, Dan, Carrie calls Big, she's in bed, she's lonely. We see the inside of Big's bedroom for the first time. Was anyone? I was like, what the hell is this weird red murder room that he's in?
I know.
But he's in bed smoking a cigarette. It was like he is Satan.
Yes, Satan. But remember the episode? I forget when, I think it was the episode when she falls into the pond and she makes the metaphor with that wall. She goes, you and me, I like that red wall. Like, we just don't work. Somebody will remember. Wait,
she commented on the red wall in his room.
Yeah, but in a different episode.
In a different episode.
God,
it's been a while.
He smokes a cigarette, and in that episode, one of my favorite lines, he's like, we used to smoke together. And she's like, we used to do a lot of bad things together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But the red wall is murderous. But I love the analysis of that they, even these cringy plot lines that make us not necessarily like the character, even though we love the plot, are what they need to grow. And that could also be why it's so hard for friends to even understand that cosmic connection, because they've never really seen it, because it only happens in those quiet moments. So I love, you've helped me look at that. Well, or epic romance,
I'm just fucked up in toxicity. There's that too.
Are you? I mean, I would love to hear about either of you when you dated your own Big. I mean, I talked about this a million times on the show, but we all have some version of this guy in our past, no?
Probably.
And obviously, we'll name names and then I'll tag those people.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, there are definitely people in my past who I'm not proud of my telephone correspondence with them. And, you know, just the tiniest morsel of affection that they give you, you just like jump on it. But that could, you get older and you realize, you know, that could be all that they've got to give in that moment. I mean, I tend to think people can give you a little bit more than that. But sure. Analyzing it from the Big perspective, that could just be what he had. But thankfully, I do think that I have a pretty strong aversion to a sure guy. Like, I need a, hey, come over.
Yeah, you need a sure exclamation point at the very least. That was a sure period. Yeah, I would have been devastated to get that short.
Do you have a Big? Perhaps you've talked about your Big.
Me? I mean, yeah. Sure. Yeah, sure. Period. Yes, I do. I think I told this on an episode a long time ago, but just briefly, I mean, a Big in that the level of cuckoo I went when he dumped me was so low and so crazy, but I did become a better version of myself because I am so grateful for it because of all the, you know, all this, everything that Lauren said so much better than I can. But at my lowest with him, I mean, I'm breaking into his house. I'm calling him from concerts and holding the phone up in hopes that he'll hear the, right. Talk about cringe. It was truly sick.
Wow.
Sick. Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, listen, my perspective on it is complicated. And okay, so here's the part where I reveal myself to be sort of outside of the box, so to speak. Like, I am more recently in the last year or so, I have been studying esoteric Kabbalah and doing healing sessions for people and stuff. And so, in addition to all of the writing and blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
So, there is this concept in Kabbalistic teachings called the serpent is the savior that I'm sort of obsessed with. So, you know, like the basic serpent in the garden story. Sure. The idea is that we think the serpent is the bad guy, right? Mm. In that story. And actually the serpent is what brings about change. And even when you think about, I mean, I literally have this tattooed on my arm, the snake shedding its skin. Like the snake becomes so uncomfortable that it literally has to tear its own skin off to rebirth itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very interested in the idea of alchemizing shadow, because that thing that you think is bad is probably the friction that you need to get so uncomfortable that you have to grow. So I don't know that it's me justifying my own toxic instincts, But I will say, like, I've been working with the teacher and blah, 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 and he's been doing this shit for 50 years. And, you know, we talk a lot about this idea of the friction being the important thing for growth.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just tend to be more forgiving of myself in terms of all the times that I was drawn to something that on the surface seems bad for me, but I can't get out of it. I feel a little bit like if I were supposed to get out of it, I would have. And then when it's done, somehow you just move. Like you're either that person leaves or your body just is like, oh, I'm suddenly fucking done and over it. And that to do it before you're ready is doing violence onto yourself spiritually, because otherwise you'll swing back the other way. Right. So what's interesting is that she came over there and big left. So that's what she needed. Like the universe handled it. That is the fate. Right. Cause she was like the universe did for her what she couldn't do for herself. And then she grew. So, I don't know. Forgive me for being overly woo woo about the whole thing, but I
not
think
at all.
No, I love it.
The more woo the better. I mean, it's such a more interesting way of looking at like past relationships that were a quote unquote failure, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, big is that for her. And in a way that, you know, it's really an end just like that when he fully sheds his skin. And that's the only reason that we still have a show and a story to tell is because of the way that that affects her.
Right.
But we got a lot of serpents in this episode because we also have Richard, who is, I mean, of all the terrible men in this show, next, Lauren is going to tell us that she loves Richard.
No, no. Well, no, for me, it's different because I spent then 8 to 10 years working with James Remar on Dexter. So I had like a whole different. So for me, I was like, oh, because like the story is so different. And there's frankly, there was like nudity in sex. So I'm like working with a coworker and I was like, oh my God, I have to just like move on from that.
Of course, I didn't even think about that connection. Yeah.
You know, and I don't love Richard. I love James.
Right. I mean, James. He's a terrific actor. The character is who is
right. But when I rewatched it, I was like nostalgic in a different way. Because like, oh my God, like he's so not that guy in Dexter. He's so like the character of Richard is so different than Harry.
Mm-hmm.
They're both a little bit diabolical in their own way, but I just it gave me the feels in a different way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, this is the episode where Samantha is getting the feels for him for the first time. And it's so fun to see her in just how spun out she is by the feeling of actually falling in love with someone. And going through the thing that all of her friends have experienced that she never has, of just the insecurity of like, does this guy not love me back? And is he cheating on me? And like, it's such an interesting dance because in a way it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, like you are questioning your relationship to that extent. It can have the effect of pushing the person away and then they do the thing that you've been so scared they're doing. I'm not saying that it was Samantha's fault that Richard was cheating on her with whoever that was, but you could also argue that she just sensed this on some level that it was happening. Right. You know what it reminded me of? Did either of you watch the new season of Love is Blind?
Yes, obviously.
Dan? No? Well, I mean, that's for another podcast, you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
I can't remember it. Chelsea and
Mullet.
Not Mullet.
Oh, not Chelsea. Mullet.
Chelsea and a guy with real short blonde hair who wanted to go choose Jessica, but he ultimately chose Chelsea because she said she looked like Megan Fox. And then he was like, she doesn't look like Megan Fox. Those two, it reminded me of them because she is constantly going like, are you sure about this? Are you sure you love me? Are you sure you want me to? And in a way it does have the effect of like pushing him away, but also she was right to feel insecure because he was an asshole in the end.
Right. Oh, so yeah, what I thought you were talking about was Chelsea and Trevor. Because you know about all the fallout of that, right?
Yes, that Trevor had a girlfriend outside the whole time.
Right? So like, they didn't show this in the show. They present Chelsea as like this super insecure person when really she didn't pick the guy who was, I fell for it. And obviously editing is a thing and it's not my fault. But I was like, like, he's so great. Like, that's the guy. What are you doing? Right. And then it gets revealed that he's the villain. he's like the villain in Frozen. He's like Prince Charming, who turns out to be the villain. Like, I was like, he had me. And she had the right intuition, which is, I think, the thing that you're talking about, Samantha. Like, what's great about the storytelling is that you think Samantha, you, think Samantha is crazy, and she's fucking right.
She's right.
And so to me, that speaks more to trusting ones. And I think as women, so this is my, it's my perspective as a woman, right? Is that like, we're taught to ignore our feelings and be, we're convinced like, oh, you're insecure and you're crazy and just stop it. Just stop. And actually she trusts her instinct and she's fucking right.
She's and right.
I think it's very validating, actually. It's heartbreaking, but it's like, oh yeah, dude, that thing, that little voice, like maybe we shouldn't tell women not to listen. I mean, maybe also don't put on a white trench coat and a wig and be insane, but like trusting.
But such a great look. Samantha Bones.
Yeah. That's a great, I know. Where do we think Samantha got that art? The single, perhaps only moment of Sex in the City when her taste level dips a little bit with that little Home Goods piece of art.
I was surprised.
Very good.
She's just so cool and elegant always. And it was such a kind of live, laugh, love piece.
Oh my God.
But that, I think, was kind of the point they were making. She was becoming a little bit of the person that she never thought she would.
I think you're right, but that is a missing scene. Like, I really would have loved to have seen her having that moment of like, oh my God, should I get this? Oh my God, am I this person? Oh, I'm just going to do it. Do you know what I mean?
And like, Charlotte, who actually knows art, could be like, are you sure about that? I mean, I could maybe pitch some ideas.
Do you know, I would love if there were more. We can't really, because the gist of the show is that, you know, it's from Carrie's perspective, but it would be so cool to go back in time and have more scenes where Charlotte and Samantha are doing something, just the two of them. Miranda and Samantha are doing, I love the unexpected dynamic between the Diagonals at the brunch table. Totally. So I fully support a Charlotte Samantha capsule episode where they go on the hunt for heart art.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I'm a big therapy person. I would say for me, the greatest benefit of therapy, if I can look back at all of the years that I have spent in therapy, has been changing the way that I speak to myself internally. You know, everybody always says like, you have to treat yourself the way that you would treat a friend. That's much easier said than done. So many of us are our own worst critics, and it takes some help to untangle that. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because it's entirely online. So it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So take a moment, visit betterhelp.com/likemat today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/likemat. You know, this show is all about honest conversations where we really face our fears. And for some of us, it's a fear of aging. For some of us, it's a fear of carbs. And hey, I get it. The fear is real. But that is why I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Hero Bread. Hero Bread has remade many of your favorite foods, but in these fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. Two of my favorite things. I've always said if I ever have twin children, their names are going to be protein and fiber. What did I have for lunch today? A tuna sandwich on their seeded bread. It was the perfect texture. It toasts up just like a dream. My God, was it good. And right now, if you go to hero.co and use code LIKEMAT, you will get 10% off your first order. So don't give up on being a breadhead, because Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, use code LIKEMAT at checkout. That's LIKEMAT at hero.co.
Oh my God. By the way, that's totally an episode they could do on And Just Like That, where they see that it's like not an original piece of art, that it's like some cheesy Home Goods like reproduction.
Yeah.
And Samantha's like, why does that look familiar? Oh my God.
Like, yeah, I mean, Charlotte, I do love any moment that Charlotte gets to like flex her art expertise, that we get to see this other side of her. And we see that here because she's giving a tour of MoMA. She sees Trey, he's walking with Bunny, yet another one of the terrible men. He's walking with his mom, Bunny. And then she goes out with the guy from the museum. Here's my question around this. The beginning of the date with the guy from the museum, they are both kind of like fresh off a breakup of some kind and both talking about it so much. And I was just thinking about like when I started dating my now husband, and when I was like, you know what? I just want to not do that. I don't have to keep secrets from anything, but like, I don't need to give you my entire like dating biography. What do you feel is the etiquette around talking about exes, bringing that into a new relationship?
I am a little bit more with you, where you kind of give an amount of information that would be essential. You know, if you went to Peru and you're talking about that time you went to Peru, you don't have to obfuscate who you were in Peru with. But yeah, I agree that if you ground everything in the past relationships, it can be a little bit tricky to build the future ones. And maybe that's what planted the seed of his freak out when he got into her apartment and just could not process that. Although it was a little presumptuous for him to think that the size of the apartment was because of her ex, even though that was accurate.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm with you that a bare minimum ex discussion policy.
Oh yeah, here we are, oppositional again. No, I think
yes.
Good. No, I think there are stages at which you reveal, but I actually think that when you talk about why past relationships worked out or didn't over time, that's a really good way to get to know somebody. Like I don't want to trauma bond with somebody right away and be like, oh yeah, what's happening? Oh Jesus, like this one. But I think over time it's a really helpful process to be like, oh, that's how you were. I think you understand somebody better when you understand their history. You understand anything better when you understand the history, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, it feels important to get it because
I love that.
I'm a writer, yeah. I'm a storyteller. So when you understand the points of the narrative, you know where the reversals are and where the turns are and the tragedies are. And so I think it really helps you locate someone in the moment that they're in when you see the backstory.
And it's a much more mature perspective as well. It gets you out of this sort of childish possessiveness of, you know, your next life began when we met eyes.
No, it's the fading thing, right?
Yeah,
it's
like
every
that.
Moment up until now brought you to this place. So you don't have to do anything, but I tried loving all of it.
Right. I like that. I think you can count this as a healing session because maybe, I'm learning.
But I also think what's interesting about one of you said, like planting the seeds of his freak out when he got to her apartment, right? I think it's a real thing about men being intimidated by successful women.
I'm sure you've been in that situation.
Sure have. So that's all I'll say. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And it is a challenge. It's a challenge.
Yeah, you are blowing my mind around this perspective, like dealing with exes. And I don't know, every time Lauren talks, I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I think now. Wait, yeah. I guess I do love big. You know what?
Yeah.
I take back everything I've been saying for a year. I do love big. I will say, I mean, even like in this episode when they do break out the Moon River LP and they start doing the twist, I'm like, I'm back in. I get it.
Totally. And I always think, like, I mean, I would not date Big, but I love Big. I would change not one sentence of the show because it's just such a beautiful arc, and it's such an iconic dynamic, and it provokes these types of questions.
It's Chris Noth, right? It's like he gives you a look and I'm like, where are my pants? Like, I don't care. Right? I'm like, oh my God, like I have a full physical reaction to that kind of
right.
His nonverbal seduction skills are off the charts in the show. In a way that I'm just like, I don't even know what's happening, but I would be fucked. Like the fact that she said I'm gonna go, I'm like, nope, no way. Where are my pants?
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
and she gives him such a hard time about being older, which is part of his charm. But I'm like, I'm afraid to Google what Chris Noth's age was because he's probably 42 at the time.
Right. I know. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that is true.
80-year-old.
That is one of my favorite. I love that scene so much, though. And it has, in my little Carrie Bradshaw captions, it has what to my mind is really the platonic ideal of a Carrie Bradshaw pun, which is when you're tired, you take a Napa, you don't move to Napa, because it's just so perfect and stupid and brilliant at the same time. And then she calls him the Chrysler Building, and it's just perfect.
It's heartbreaking because she's trying so hard to be cool girl. She's trying to make light of all of it and watching her fall apart and try.
That pizza will be great in the morning when she's just crumbling. And then she goes and talks to her friends about, you know, should she have sex with him one last time, as if it's totally in her control. Yeah.
It's so, but also my favorite moment in the Moon River is his old man grunt when he bends down. Bends down to put in the record player and he grunts, and that's what makes her say, like, okay.
Totally. It's just perfect banter. It's perfect romance.
Yeah, it is.
It was hard to watch that and go, I probably would have made that sound too if I did that squat right now.
Right. Sure. Yeah. For sure. And you're both a lot younger than me. So for sure.
We'll test it. Let's all drop something on the ground right now and see if we can pick it up without grunting.
I think just based on like your Carrie Bradshaw work alone, your work in the heels, you're going to be fine. Right.
Yes. You know,
I
picked a high degree of difficulty woman to impersonate from a, like, you know, she's just this perfect athletic specimen while also being this effortlessly beautiful woman.
Yes, like I may need you to teach me to walk in heels. Like I'm bad.
In very, very early Carrie Bradshaw days, Women's Wear Daily asked me to make a video of how to walk in heels, but I don't actually walk in heels. I stand in heels and take a picture and then move on with my life. And so then, but I was like, this is so cool. And it was brand new. And I'm like, what? People are asking me to do things. So I said, yes, of course. And then I found friends to actually teach me how to walk in heels. And then I made this video of how to talk, walk in heels.
And what is the secret?
Oh, it's like I think it's the ball of your foot is important, and to be slightly like leaned forward rather than back, I remember. And Carrie, the thing that's good for Carrie Bradshaw impersonation is she kind of has like a little trot when she's walking, and it's, for me, much easier to imitate that than if she had sort of a Naomi Campbell supermodel strut. Right. She's kind of like bouncing around.
But that's very funny. I just remember, you know, Insatiable is based on a pageant coach, and it's a real life guy, and we got to be very good friends. And one night we got drunk in the lobby of a hotel bar, and because he does it on the show. But he was like, all right, because we're good friends. And he's like, all right, honey. And like, suddenly, like, he was grabbing me and he's like, headlights up. And like, all of this stuff. Right? Like, okay. And he was like, why are you walking like you got a giant pad? And I'm like, like, I don't have the most graceful walk. Like, I have flipper feet. Like, I have no arch. And so he has sort of, he groomed me over the course of Insatiable to like, step
into myself
in a different way, which was actually hilarious. So to this day,
I love that.
And he taught me to like stand in a photo in a way that wasn't like whatever ridiculous.
Right.
Very funny.
Okay, so when we meet in real life, we'll swap tips and
great.
We'll share
Amazing.
We'll share walking tips and tricks, and we'll end up just the most elegant people in the universe.
I know it's such a shame this is an audio medium and we can't just do like a walk off yeah. right now.
Yeah, so good.
Both of you. So what else? I mean, we have the horse and buggy moment with Bobo.
Oh, Bobo. Yeah. Here's $400. See what you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if those horses are treated too well in Central Park. I don't know if Carrie would do right. that today.
Yes. You know, we've learned a lot since Sex and the City about bisexuality, about horse
That's right.
horse treatment, about
yeah.
about gender. So yeah, we've lived and we've learned. And maybe they'll have a horse in and just like that that like gets treated like a king. Like everybody go because Kristen Davis cares a lot about animals as a human. So
That's
maybe
right.
in season three, maybe they'll like rewrite the horse plot line.
At Aiden's farm, he's got a yeah. horse. But
he'll free all horses in Central Park. I mean, they all run free.
Yeah. Oh, I would love that. A little activist plot line for Charlotte. And it could be a throwback to that episode when she was riding a horse through Central Park. Okay, we have to call someone. That could be pretty epic.
Okay, we once again breaking episodes yeah. for season three for them right here for free.
I also love Miranda in this episode. Like I could yeah. not love a person more than and just in general her arc from like you know and that's the amazing thing about later seasons is they all sort of like flesh out of their archetypes. But her arc from that independent career person to this loving mother building IKEA furniture with her ex, but in a compatible way, and her with that baby, amazing. Just, I mean, even though they're fake people, I just get so emotional. I think it's so beautiful.
It definitely made me cry. Like, I mean,
yeah.
mother of a son, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I related so deeply to that Miranda story because I wasn't like, I always dreamed of having a baby. Like we were trying, right? Like it wasn't like, I mean, we tried like 1.5 times and it happened, but like I had the experience, no, but this is important because I had the experience of 9 months of panic because I wanted a kid, but I wasn't sure I was ready. And I thought I would have to try a bunch and that would get me ready of like the wanting of the thing I couldn't have. And it happened so quick that wow. I was like, oh shit, okay. And people say terrible things to you when you're pregnant. Like, oh, you better write now because you're not gonna have any time once the baby comes. Like that there is an arc in that you transform, like you just said, from the career independent woman to the mother. And for me, I've had to integrate both of those things.
I love, that's so beautiful.
Right, but that moment, I was terrified. Like the doctor said to me, just so you know, sometimes we say push and the women say, I don't want to. I'm like, that's stupid. Like, what's it going to stay in there? And like, sure enough, when I got to that place and they said push to me, I was like, no. And they said, why? And I said, because we have a good thing going. Like, it took me 9 months to get cool with it. Like, he's in here. We have a good relationship. I talk to him all day long every day. I can protect him. We're happy. And once he comes
wow.
out, all bets are off. Like, there's no controlling what happens to him. And they're like, okay, but push. And I did. And when they, like, suddenly it wasn't quite giraffe in the room. It was more like, oh, I know you. Like, I've been talking to you for almost 10 months. And now I see you. And like, oh, I've known you for lifetimes and like, hi, I know you, you're my favorite person. And like, they put him on my chest and I was like, oh, this is the happiest day of my life. He's been my favorite person always. And now I get to meet him. I didn't know that was going to happen. Like I thought I was terrified. I hired a nanny immediately. Like I thought I was going to have postpartum where you hate the baby. You know, I was scared. And it was the opposite. I had inverse postpartum where I hated everyone except the baby. And I've like, but like scary, like I really, I wanted to like take him in the woods and build a nest and everyone else can fuck off and die. But if there's going to be a version of it, like, let it be that I'm obsessed, right? Like it's the good version of it. But I really was like, it was very different than what I expected. Sorry. That was a lot of personal information that nobody needed. But
oh,
no, it's, beautiful. I was, this is exactly what I wanted to ask about that. You know, just
so related.
Yeah. And you got your own Magda in the end, it sounds like, with this nanny.
Literally, her name is that.
No.
Where'd it go?
Were you just like you hired love. As soon as you're the name? I would have been
no,
like,
I didn't even ever make the connection. Well, because we had one in the beginning who turned out to be sort of a disaster. And so then my son's nanny, who's been with him forever, that's her name is Maggie, but it's Magda.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's she's incredible.
She's a member of the family. She's amazing.
Dan, anything doing with Carrie Dragshaw now? How much bandwidth does she take up in your sort of day-to-day yeah. life right now?
She's had a lot of phases over her life. She's in the beginning, she took a lot of bandwidth, but it was such a different category for me. I had to have a corporate job. And so it was like, you know, you always have room for dessert kind of thing. So it was just so joyous to just be constantly thinking and making Carrie Bradshaw things. And now, like, not to take the character too seriously, but she's in this limbo period in between and Just Like That seasons where I can't figure out how to like go back in time and put her in a cute little tutu again. And I'm just sort of in wait for the new season. So she's not taking up a lot of bandwidth now, but she's just this constant source of joy for me. And she'll find her character again once the new season gets kicking, which I have heard has, like, the writing's been basically done and that they're going to start filming soon.
I know, we're not going to get it till 2025.
I didn't know that. Okay, well then Carrie has to figure out what to do with herself in this limbo because she can't stay dormant till 2025.
It gives you the space to do what you want.
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's very true. It's very true.
I also think that, you know, on the off chance Michael Patrick's listening, Carrie Dragshaw is a character in season 3. I do think Carrie the character has reached a level of fame where it would make sense that there is a
she's clearly epically famous. Yeah,
yeah.
She's clearly a very famous writer and New York. I mean, she was picked for that runway show so many seasons ago. So she's been drag level for a minute. Yeah.
That's very funny.
I'm available.
I didn't even ask either of you when we started, you know, I like to ask everyone to just fit themselves into that tiny little limiting box of whether you're a Carrie or a Marie. I mean, I guess, Dan, there's no point in even asking you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I am, her virtues are mine. Her vices are mine. I'm still waiting to find an Aiden who makes me stop smoking cigarettes. So I am a Carrie through and through.
It makes me so happy. I mean, I pray for your health, but it makes me so happy to hear from someone who's actively smoking cigarettes in this day and age. Someone's got to do it because it brings me so much joy when she does.
Yeah.
You're out there doing the work.
Yeah, now it's like vintage. I smoke in black and white. So yes, but I also, you know, spend too much money on shoes and maybe monopolize the brunch conversation. I don't know.
Great. I mean, you're a Carrie through and through. Lauren, I wouldn't know how to paint you into one of these corners.
This one is a rough, I mean, listen, I'm sort of a fluid in every way person. And so I would say I am definitely not a Charlotte. Right, that's the one. But I, at different points in my life, like I, the Carrie thing, because I'm a writer, like you would think I'm a, but something about the way she moves through the world, like her innocence isn't mine. So actually I'm more of a Miranda Samantha, which seems totally oppositional, but isn't at all. Like, I am always the filthiest of all of my friends. Like, I'm the one that's up for anything. I'm the one that has all the stories. But also, I have that, like, fierce, professional mama bear, you know? And also, like, I'm the bisexual one, right? So there's that, too, which, you know, came through later. And it's interesting because that character doesn't quite embrace the men in her past in the way that I feel like I like bisexuality represented in media. personally. And you know, you touched on
right.
about the way the show kind of deals with sexuality and learning more about it. But also, you know, I know that far be it for me to ever tell anyone how to identify, right? Like, it's not because I'm bisexual and spent right. years being like, wait, what is this? And swinging back and forth. And what is it? And, but I do think, you know, to disregard every romantic relationship Miranda ever had with a man and then have her be like, I'm gay or whatever, is right. not embracing of the experience of being fluid in your, like in some points in your life or who you're attracted to or being involved with a non-binary person. Like, that's all bi to me.
Yeah.
That's
bisexual. And I know that's a word that triggers people because it's about the binary, but it's not. It's about one's own and other. Bi. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm older. So that word is something I had to adopt. Like, pansexual feels not true to me. For me, other people get to do whatever they want, but it's a word that I don't know. I just didn't kind of come of age with it.
So right. like,
even though I have to say other words have been introduced into the lexicon that make more sense about me, it's just not, it's a court. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true.
I love that there's more language. I think our words create our reality. So fine. Great. Mm. You know?
All right. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you for any just parting thoughts on Che Diaz, since we're on the topic.
I am going to refrain from saying a word.
That's absolutely fair.
I have been canceled lowercase before in my career, and I need to not step in a pool that I have no
Never
business.
Never again.
I'm just not, I pitched a musical with Steven Sater, who wrote the book for Spring Awakening and is like the most lovely, amazing treasure of a human ever. And it had, it was a show with a non-binary lead. And, you know, the joke of the pitch was like, neither Steven nor I identify as non-binary, but if you've met us for 5 minutes, you know that that could change in a dime in a second for either one of us, right? And over the course of doing that show, I like, listen, my pronouns are yes and. Like, I like identify as a woman, and there's for sure more there. So all of that is to say, from my own experience, like, that's where I leave it in my own bubble. Like, Che Diaz gets to be whatever Che Diaz wants to be. I don't have horses in that race in the same way, so I don't feel like it's my business to comment on it.
Fair.
Yeah, I was trying
Speaking
to think
of
about
a
call back to the Central Park horses there, but sorry, go ahead, Dan.
Well, speaking of Che Diaz and musicals, have you ever heard Sada Ramirez sing? I saw Sara in Spamalot, and everyone in the Sex and the City multiverse should YouTube. The big song in it was Whatever Happened to My Part, and Sada Ramirez sings it. And it's about this opera diva that has been kind of cut off in act two. It's a very meta song, and she comes out, Whatever Happened to My Part, the character, she comes out and it's played by Sada Ramirez. And they are an unbelievable singer, like truly next level. I'm pretty sure either nominated or won the Tony Award that year, but an absolutely epic singer. So perhaps dust off or take that musical with a non-binary lead and find his way to Sada.
Yeah.
We're both very sad about it.
Danny Pellegrino said he thought that they should have just made Che a singer. So that, like, because Sara sang in like one episode, but that would have been so much, but Andy would have eliminated all of the internet noise around the stand-up thing, which I didn't have a problem with because I buy that Che Diaz would be a very famous but also unfunny stand-up comedian. That is, to me, true to life.
Right. You don't actually have to be funny to be famous.
Not at all. Well, anything else? I feel like we've really left it all on the field. I mean, Lauren has completely turned my head upside down. I don't know. I mean, I love Big now. This was so fun. Thank you both so much for doing this.
Thank you. So fun.
And that's our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at And Just Like Matt Pod. And Just Like Matt is a World of Wonder production created and hosted by me, Matt McConkie. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky. And our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.